Welcome to the Ideas Lab Predictor podcast from the University of Birmingham. In each edition, we hear from an expert in a different field who gives us insider information on key trends, upcoming events, and what they think the near future holds.
Our guest today is Dr. Paul Garwood, who is Senior Lecturer in Archaeology and has been taking part in the Stonehenge Hidden Landscapes project. Paul, we're very excited about this. Thank you very much for joining us to tell us something about it, not everything. So perhaps you could start off just by introducing us to the project and to your role within it.
Okay, the Stonehenge Hidden Landscapes project, which has been running for 5 years since 2010, is the largest geophysical survey project, archaeological geophysical survey project ever mounted globally. And the aims of it is to survey the area around Stonehenge within the World Heritage Site, both on above ground and also below ground, to create a seamless map, three-dimensional map, of the landscape that we can see, but also the hidden landscape beneath the surface.
So we're not just talking about what we think about as the Henge, but we're talking about quite a large area around that.
Well, the area around Stonehenge since the 18th century has been recognised as a landscape which is chock-a-block full of various monuments. Some of them date to the same time Stonehenge, some predate and some post-date the monument. Of course, the focus of attention has always been that central stone-built thingy that everybody knows about, but it's very difficult to make sense of this thing without understanding the landscape around it, to put it into context in terms of the whole use of the landscape.
Because people use it as a ritual process and they use it in all sorts of different ways.
Well, the landscape already had a sacred significance before Stonehenge was built. One of the largest Middle Neolithic, so around about 3,000 to 3,500 BC, monuments known in the British Isles, was built in the Stonehenge landscape to the north of Stonehenge at a time when there was no Stonehenge. So the landscape already had a deep history, if you like, of occupation, inhabitation, and sacred significance, to which Stonehenge itself initially merely added to before later on it became the centre of attention. And of course, still the centre of attention for us, but in fact, for large periods after it fell out of use, it was something really in quite a marginal landscape. And so its meaning has always changed over the centuries and millennia.
So when you say it's the biggest geophysical remote sensing survey in the world, is that in terms of detail or is that in terms of the amount of space that you've covered?
Both.
The
scale of the Stonehenge and Landscapes project is unprecedented. It's roughly just short of 12 square kilometres of survey, combining a multiplicity of techniques. So we've been using magnetometry, resistivity survey, ground penetrating radar, a range of other quite innovative methods, as well as topographic survey and terrestrial laser scanning. What that allows us to do is to model the terrain and monuments on the surface in three dimensions, to map the subsurface features using magnetometry, for example, in two dimensions, but also to use ground penetrating radar to provide volumetric data for features and monuments beneath the surface. So put all that together and you can create a seamless map over 12 square kilometres of what's below ground, on the ground surface, and if you like, those islands of archaeology monuments poking up above the surface as it now exists.
So it's new technology and new methodology as well?
The technologies involved have existed for some time, but it's the particular organisation of them and the very high resolution versions of those technologies which we're now able to use. And what they, in particular, motorization. So motorization of ground-penetrating radar, motorization of magnetometry, for instance, allows for very rapid, but at the same time very, very precise, high-resolution survey work to be conducted. And it's really only on that basis that it's been possible for us to have this ambition and to undertake this work. That equipment, mostly provided by the Ludwig Boltzmann Institute for Archaeological Prospection and Virtual Archaeology, based in Vienna, they provided most of that mechanized, motorized equipment.
So, of course, what we all want to know is, what have you found? I know that's going to be gone into in a lot more detail at a big press conference at the British Science Festival. What can you hint at, Paul?
Well, I think the discoveries are such that at a very big scale, that the survey represents a game-changing moment, really, because what the mapping allows us to do is ask questions about whole areas, not just single monuments or points within the landscape, but how all of this joins together. So the future questions we'll ask about the landscape on the basis of the work that we've been doing are the kinds of questions we could never ask before about whole areas of landscape. Of course, the attention is often focused on Stonehenge. Yeah. And for that famous monument built in the middle part of the 3rd millennium BC, we are providing a new context for what's going on in the landscape around Stonehenge. So, for instance, we now know that there are far more small monuments which had sacred significance and which were being used ritually, which are contemporary with Stonehenge and almost certainly used at the same time that Stonehenge was being used in the area immediately around the monument itself. So Stonehenge did not stand in sort of isolation, but rather was part of a very densely, if you like, inhabited landscape where a range of activities were taking place and a multiplicity of different small foci, like small shrines, small cult centres around the central one. In addition to that, we are for the first time able to make a direct link between the Stonehenge architecture and other architecture in the landscape around because of the discovery of two pits in the Great Cursus, and there's this huge earlier monument to the north, but these are located on solstitial alignments as viewed from the Hillstone, one of the stone settings on the periphery of Stonehenge itself. So the very first time there's a celestial set of alignments which are linking features in the wider landscape with the Stonehenge complex itself. In addition to that, there are a whole host of later monuments in the Stonehenge landscape. There are early Bronze Age burial monuments in their hundreds, and we are surveying a large number of those. Many we knew about before, but because we can see beneath the surface, we see them in a completely different light. We realize they're often multi-phase. They had long histories in their own right over hundreds of years in the early Bronze Age. We are seeing entire agricultural landscapes, particularly in later prehistory, in the later Bronze Age and Iron Age, when the landscape was divided up. Stonehenge was no longer the focus of attention, and the landscape was broken up. Settlements were created within the wider landscape, and Stonehenge became a kind of more marginal feature within this new landscape order. So there's Iron Age, there's Roman material, there's medieval, and so forth. It's fantastic.
So the combination of 5 years of hard work, Will there be another phase of research at Stonehenge, or is the next thing to use the same principles somewhere else?
Research at Stonehenge never stops. There's always something. But we are not leaving it to one side at all. The data sets that we've generated, of course, we're going to be publishing these in the next few years. There'll be a host of research papers that will also accompany those big monographs that we'll be producing. But we're certainly seeing this as the stepping stone towards future work. So I think it's clearly geophysical survey involves only scanning things remotely. And what you can't get from that easily is any kind of dating evidence. And of course, the only way to get dating evidence is to dig things up. So one of the things we'll certainly be looking at is a program of fieldwork, including further survey, a variety of descriptions, but also highly targeted, very, very specific excavations to recover cultural material, environmental sample materials, and above all, dating evidence. So we can start to give a chronology to the many of the features that we've now seen, some which are unique, some which we think we know what they are, but we're not absolutely certain, and things which we would very much like to be able to date, again, to give that broader context for Stonehenge before, during, and after the use of the monument.
All very exciting. Thanks very much, Paul, for coming in to tell us about it.
My pleasure.
And we're looking forward to hearing more after the big press conference at the British Science Festival. The press conference is on the 9th of September, so hopefully by the 10th there will be world media coverage of everything you've been doing over the past 5 years.
There'll be lots more detail, lots of exciting news.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This podcast and others in the series are available on the Ideas Lab website, www.ideaslabuk.com. On the website, you can find out how to email us with comments, questions, or suggestions for future topics for the podcast. There's also information on the free support Ideas Lab has to offer to TV and radio producers, new media producers, and journalists.